Trinity Delphi Council debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Sleeman, Jay, and Mark. And today we are going to go over the Beta Clearance Players Primer. This is a PDF that was released early in Torg Eternity's history after the main Kickstarter and the core rules came out, to give a little both a sneak peek and some things that players could use before future source books, which are now past source books, but there's still some information in here that I think is valuable, as well as I know a lot of people don't even know that these exist. There's a player's primer and a GM's primer, but we'll be going over the player's primer. So I just thought that this would be a good thing to go through as something that you might be able to use in your Torg Eternity games. But before we jump in, you can email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. You can ask us questions. We'll answer those questions to the best of our abilities, and you can comment, and then we can comment on your comments. So, the Beta Clearance Player's Primer. I know both Jay and Mark have this, and we were discussing this a little bit. The very first thing that it does is it gets into clearance levels and exactly how those clearance level, the XP, breaks down. Which I think is pretty good information. Was there anything specifically in the clearance levels? Mark, you said that you were wanting to get into the clearance levels to...
Well, so organized play has clearly defined alpha clearance and beta clearance requirements, that if your mission is an alpha mission, your Storm Knights need to be alpha clearance. And if the mission is a beta mission, then you have to have beta and above. But we've been doing this for quite some time now, and one of the lessons that we learned, and the thing that I wanted to pass on about alpha clearance versus beta clearance, it is that GMs don't need to get hung up on, yeah, but this character's got 35 XP and this one's only got 10, and that's unbalanced. It really isn't. We've had some experimental stuff we've done where we've had some beta clearance characters at tables with just alpha clearance. And as long as you're – I wouldn't necessarily do that with new players, but experienced players who understand, you know, interaction attacks and card play and how the game flows and what you can and can't do and things of that nature, it really doesn't impact things that much. As much as it would in different games where XP and clearance levels or player levels are different. Because you can still contribute, you know, a good success is still a good success. An outstanding is still an outstanding. From the GM standpoint, it changes just a little bit depending on who your players are at the table, who's got the heavy skill points versus others, and setting your difficulty numbers. But from the standpoint of my lower level alpha Storm Knights aren't going to be able to contribute with beta when, if they're running with, you know, a couple, two or three beta clearance Storm Knights, that's really not the case. They still have as much chance to contribute as anybody else in combat or in the rest of the story, especially when, let's say you've got a mind heavy character that's got you've built to be a mind or a face, and that stuff starts popping up in the game, and the other characters are melee and ranged strikers. You still contribute, and vice versa. If you've built a ranged striker and the other betas are, you know, deck manipulation or mind or face or something like that, you can still take out the bad guys. So it doesn't really get to be a problem until you get four betas and one alpha. And now you've got – and you're running in a mission that's set with difficulty numbers in beta clearance. Then it becomes a problem. But inside of alpha clearance or inside of beta clearance, and you've got a 75 XP versus a 50 XP newly minted beta, it doesn't affect it the way that the math would seem to indicate it would.
So, Jay, what are your thoughts on the clearance levels?
So this is the beta clearance primer, but it does go in and tell you about some of the other clearances. So obviously you have alpha clearance, which is your brand new Storm Knights, still rated better than any ords, even professional soldiers or what have you, just because they can't operate inside pure zones. They'll probably get messed up. They can't spend possibilities. So even your starter Storm Knight is still better than like a professional soldier in this context. And then beta is after you've had 10 missions, you're considered beta clearance, 10 successful missions, I would imagine, as far as the Delphi Council is considered. But to me, beta clearance is basically the assumed level. Like the 10 alpha clearance games are kind of like the intro to me. And the thing about beta clearance is that it is a huge range. So they go in here and they tell us what the XP bands are. So beta clearance starts at 50 and gamma clearance is 200. And although Mark is saying that there's not a huge difference between an alpha and like a low beta, there's a big difference I found in a low beta and a high beta. Mm-hmm. Like once you get up to that 150 kind of range, you start getting some, we call it bowling with hellfire powers, in our group, but it gets pretty serious. And they talk about some interesting things here. As beta, an often forgotten thing is that you get access to better requisitions. You can either make two requisitions per character or one better requisition. And one character in the group gets to make an even better requisition. And depending on your group, you might even need to remind them about this sometimes. Some groups will never let you forget it, though. And then it talks about how the part I found more interesting is it talks about what the Delphi Council is actually doing with beta characters, how this whole pushing concept where they're trying to make characters do the impossible and train them kind of danger room style to get them using their reality skills, which it never really mechanically comes up anywhere, but I think it's a nice little tidbit. Then, even though it is the beta primer, it does describe Gamma, Delta, and Omega a little bit. Now, I have had characters get to Gamma clearance in my home game, and that's 200 plus experience. At that point, you can requisition Eternity Shards and fight really big things. It doesn't really go into much more about that. Then Delta clearance, 500 experience, and I can only imagine what a Delta clearance character is supposed to be like. The High Lords are Delta threats. And then finally, Omega clearance, that's for 1,000 plus XP. And this I found was kind of like the most interesting part because it discusses where Quinn Sebastian came from and kind of like the overlying concept of the entire Torg Eternity campaign, where if you get to 1,000, you can reset yourself down to zero and go to a whole new cosm where you don't have, where there's no version of you. So you are kind of limited where you can do it. In theory, you could use that to change to a different campaign, I guess, but I think only the most hard ass of GMs would ask for you to have to do that. I guess like this information has been out for a while now, but I remember when first reading it was like, ah, you know, so that's how it's being done. So it's neat to know that this was the intention. There was a plan for all of this. But so far we've really only got beta, detailed. Gamma's kind of like a little iffy, but beta is what we're talking about today.
Right. I also wanted to point out the clearance levels are kind of a dual thing. One is just XP based. you're 50 XP, you hit beta, you're 200, you hit gamma. That's a mechanic thing that then opens up beta perks and gamma perks, or everything would be alpha. You could get all the alpha perks or whatever. But there's also the Delphi Council part, which is an actual, you have done these missions, so you are at a higher clearance level. So you have the one that's mechanic based. Can I get these perks? How much XP do I have? And then there is the story based within the Delphi Council. I'm considered this good of a, you know, our team is this good of a team. In my home campaign, as I've said a few times, I don't have the Delphi Council, but I still use the beta clearance as influence. So my Storm Knights aren't going around saying we're beta clearance in the Delphi Council, because there is no Delphi Council. But once they hit that XP of 50, then they get beta. And I also give them kind of influence based off of that, because they're out there doing Storm Knight things. And as they do more Storm Knight things, then their reputation advances in the population, you know, just ordinary people or governments or other organizations and stuff. Plus, I have a different Storm Knight organization, but they don't call that alpha clearance or beta clearance, but it is a, hey, you've done this much for the organization, so therefore it all works out mechanically. It's just story-wise, they have different names or different thoughts on it. And yes, it was. It doesn't directly say that Quinn went through it, but it's obvious from when you when you read the core rules and then you read this Omega clearance, what had happened and how Quinn knew certain things and was able to prepare for certain things. But yes, the even though it's the beta clearance, it talks about alpha clearance, it talks about beta clearance, gamma, delta, and Omega. And then it has quote unquote new perks, because a lot of these have come up elsewhere. There's human perks. So that's something that was new when this was written. There's more leadership perks, more prowess perks, reality perks, and social perks. I did want to go over maybe a couple of the perks that, again, the beta clearance primers aren't, in my experience, they're not well known to be out there. You can go to DriveThruRPG. It's a pay what you want, and they're PDFs that you can download from there. So that's where you would go to get this information. Some of these have been reprinted in other source books, like by the time of Pan Pacifica, and including Pan Pacifica, a lot of these had been included. There are a couple, though, that are only here and in Heroes of the Possibility Wars, which is also another book that I think a lot of people don't know about or didn't pick up because they didn't know that there were perks, or they thought, oh, it's just a couple of perks. So for whatever reason, they didn't want a book about a bunch of archetype, you know, NPCs. As a player, that might not be your thing. That was more of a Game Master focused book, but it did have some. The new reality perks, Sense Stela, I think is pretty cool. And reality perks are usually Core Earth, unless you're like Gamma clearance and get the perk that allows you to choose a category of somewhere else. That is a beta clearance perks with at least 5 adds in reality. But you've become attuned to Stela and can sense with if it's within a kilometer, which I think is pretty cool. It makes those Core Earth Storm Knights, it kind of really entrenches them into the reality category of they're your Stele sniffers. When you kind of, the Delphi Council kind of knows, hey, we think that there is a Stele over in this area. Make sure that a Core Earth Storm Knight goes to that one. And the other one I think is really interesting is the Create Focus, which is kind of like a temporary talisman that a Storm can imbue it if they're in a pure dominant zone, put some possibilities into it, and then they can use that as a temporary personal talisman, so it doesn't affect others, but it can keep them connected or help them reconnect, which I think is both of those perks I really think are cool. I think they really bring out the reality in that. Jay, did you have any thoughts on any of the perks that were given if in this book?
Like overall, or okay, so well, one thing is unfortunately, not to counter anything you just said, but it does say for said Stella at the very end that this perk is available to reality rated characters outside of Core Earth, so
Okay.
you don't actually have to be from Core Earth to take Sense Stella. It also mentions that Sense Stella can also sense Dim Thread and Nightmare Trees, which is arguably even more useful for characters just in general. I did like these. I especially like Create Focus. On the Infiniverse Exchange, I made a Storm Knight's Guide to Realm Runners, and I made a whole bunch of perks based off of these, where Create Focus was actually the requirement. Yeah, I really did like those. One thing that's worth mentioning is m many of these perks were republished and slightly altered. And anytime you see that, anything that was actually physically printed takes precedence.
Right.
So it's a digital, like if it's a digital only thing like this, then it's kind of nebulous and in the ether, and only once it's on paper is it real. But there are some other good ones in here. Of course, the big one is, where is it now that I'm looking for it? The improved versions of Realm Dancer is pretty good. It's not a reality one. Where is it? Oh yeah,
Talk
because it's a
about
prowess
leadership.
perk. No, Cosm Adaptation. You were talking about it
Ah,
before, but
yes.
yeah, it's not a reality perk, so anyone could take it. Cosm Adaptation is probably the big one. The other super, I would say probably the most impactful perk from this book for my group has been Killshot. It was basically the balancing act for Double Tap, because Double Tap has often been the much maligned perk of why would I take this, right? So Double Tap leads to Kill Shot, and Kill Shot is very good. What it does is it basically lets you roll the bonus dice for damage twice and apply the larger result. But you have to be receiving the Double Tap bonus, which means you're not going to be firing like a long burst or something like that. So monster hunters in my group have you and snipers have really gotten a lot of use out of this. There's a few good ones in here. There are a few that are in some ways almost potentially overpowered. Like personally, Quick is kind of a interesting one where it's either extraordinarily overpowered or completely useless, depending on how you run your game. Where normally you can rush up to your double your move, but this ups it to times five, so you can get super far. And if you're using tactical combat where you're actually keeping track of ranges, that can be super powerful, assuming not every combat is everyone starting right in front of each other, which tends to be the assumption sometimes. But if you have longer, like firing corridors and things like that, someone with this can really get out there. Now, whether it's that crazy when you take into account people with jetpacks and things like that, maybe not. But I've always found that this one to be like a lit, maybe just a little bit much. But overall, there's a lot of good perks in here. There are some that my players were not big fans of, mainly the the interaction attack ones that let you do more people. The fact that they require a specific card to come up and then really only let you save one per person, they just didn't really think it meant it fit a good beta slot. And that's the final thing I'll probably say about these perks is any of these that are beta perks, you have to remember that by the time you get to beta, unless you didn't take any perks along the way, your perks are probably costing a lot now. And when you hit beta is at the point where as a player, you really have to start thinking, is it worth taking this perk given how much it costs and how much more it's going to make my next perk cost? So once you hit beta is when you have to really start being sure about things.
Right. Mark, did you have any perks within any of the categories that you liked especially or wanted to take note on?
All the things that Jay said. And I will add that lead from the front. If you are building a leadership character, you must take lead from the front at some point. If you're not planning on this, you should be because otherwise you're going to run out of possibilities and then you're going to hamstring yourself. The nice thing about lead from the front is that once you get it, you can trigger any of your leadership perks by becoming very vulnerable instead of spending a possibility, which makes you almost overpowered as you start stacking all of these leadership perks. From a GM standpoint, it's very, very frustrating when you start turning over drama cards and your leader in the group says, "Yeah, I'm going to become very vulnerable and we're not going to be stymied." Or I'm going to become very vulnerable and we're not confused. Or I'm going to become very vulnerable. And all these things start happening and they start doing things to your deck and remove swapping conflict lines. And a good leader with lead from the front can absolutely hamstring and nullify the Cosm specific drama deck to the point where it's just, okay, who goes first? And that now, and that's. I mean, that's good and that's bad. That's what the character's designed to do, and the character is designed to give your Storm Knight team an edge by mitigating all of those things that the unique nature of card play in Torg Eternity brings to the game. That's the bad side, is that the unique nature of what the cards bring to Torg Eternity is suddenly no longer in the game. Your player gets to shine, and if the rest of the Storm Knights are smart, they are very, very happy that your leadership character can do the things that he or she can do because now they're not confused. Now they're not set back. Now the center text doesn't suddenly cause them to have to get rid of a possibility that they really needed because they only had one left, or something along those lines, depending on what's in that center text or how advanced your leader is. And all of that, it makes all of the leadership perks, not just the ones in the beta primer, but all of the leadership perks better because when you look at the leader perks and it says, if you spend a possibility, you can do this thing. And you're like, well, I really want to do that thing because that's super powerful and really good, but I've only got three possibilities and I'm going to need those to soak damage and not die. Now you can. It really is worth getting from that standpoint. The prowess perks are really, really good. If you're building a prowess character, you ought to pay attention to those. I had a lot of fun building a wheelman character that was the vehicle driver. That was his shtick. That's what he did. If it's a vehicle, I can drive it. Boom. And there's a whole bunch of stuff in the prowess section: racer, ace pilot, acrobatic, a whole bunch of things that drive defensively. That's really good from the standpoint of, I'm going to be able to, if you got a vehicle and you need to drive it, I'm the guy that's going to do it, or I'm the gal that's going to do it. And I'm built to do those things. Are you going to, in Liamen's game, that's not going to pay that much because he doesn't like chases. But for the rest of us who like chases and pull those out, it becomes a big, it's a big deal. And it's just as impactful for those segments of the game as the leader character is with lead from the front in other segments of the game. So the thing that I like about the way that the perks and the things in the beta primer, all of them, what Jay said and et cetera, is that you're begin as you go advance through the beta, alpha, beta, gamma, etc., you begin to focus more on the thing that you do, and that the sharp end of that stick becomes more apparent, and you become very, very, very good at what you do.
Yeah, to clarify, I might not like chases, but I love vehicle stuff. Vehicle combat or just obstacles, flying in turbulence. I've had that come up. I mean, the most memorable glory of my party that they still point out to me today was digging a plane out of the sand dunes of the Nile Empire because they crash landed in it. And one of the original characters, my brother's original character, was a realm runner who had that I can drive or pilot anything. Those I agree. I love that they put in a lot of vehicle perks for the people that like those. He was one that I would come up with one of the most ridiculous vehicles for whatever place they were in if it wasn't his vehicle. So like when they were in England, he got a double decker bus. When he's in the United, because you had to get the whole Storm Knight team, and I have big Storm Knight teams. Or he got the bright yellow school bus, in the United States, and it was always that type of stuff. He would just show up and be like, okay, we can go to where we need to go, and everybody just be like, oh, okay. But no, I like all of those. Realm Dancer, yes, if you're going for the Realm Runner, Realm Dancer is really nice, where it's you can ignore a disconnect per scene instead of an act. And since most acts are between 3 and 5 scenes, that's a lot more, as well as Jay pointed out, quick, if you use tactical combats and you're using either grid or measurement based combat, that just gets super effective for somebody who wants to be where they feel that they need to be within a combat. I did write a note when we go over the Game Master's Guide, Primer Guide. I'm going to go back to Mark as one of the things that he stated, but that will be
Oh,
a
here we
little
go. All right.
foreshadowing
Can't wait.
when we get to that. But no, I really suggest if you don't have the beta clearance player's primer to go to Drive-Thru RPG, pick it up, look at just some of these things, especially if you don't have Heroes of the Possibility Wars, then you're missing out on some of these perks, even if you have all the other source books. So the next part of the player's primer is the beta primer is the gear section, which there's some neat requisitions. I think Jay, you brought up the new requisitions at the beginning of an act. Normally, there are cases where sometimes a game master might want to postpone requisitions because they haven't had time to meet the Delphi Council and update them. It might happen a little bit later in an act, but normally at the start of a new act, your Storm Knights can get some requisitions, and when you hit beta, then you can either get every character, instead of asking for one thing, can ask either for two things or get a +1 to the single thing that they ask for. Also, one character can get, and you choose this, you choose what you're getting before you don't roll and then add this bonus. Before the roll, you're like, this is the one item for the group. And the one item for the group gets a +5. So your character would say, this is the one item I'm going for, but it's the group item. You get the +5, which can really bring in a lot of really good stuff at beta clearance. We've all experienced in Torganized play, a lot of times this will be used to pick up at an important Eternity Shard that would help the entire group. But there's kind of neat requisition options. Airstrike is kind of fun. Even when I was reading these earlier, fire support team can kind of be a little fun thing where everybody gets like a little minion, a follower to control and stuff like that. So I was going to ask Jay, what are your thoughts on the new requisition options, if any of those like really either appeal to you and or your group has found very useful?
There have, I don't even remember what we came of this, but there were lots of arguments about whether a bullet smith could buy blessed ammunition for their Slayer's rifle. Right? Because technically all their ammo is made by them, right? But I guess in theory they could get it blessed. So I think I may have eventually relented and allowed that. So make sure your GM would allow such a thing. But blessed ammunition is good because it's cheap. So your character, who isn't necessarily the most charismatic person in the world, has a shot at it. Speaking of other ones that are cheap and maybe too cheap or too good in the current incarnation, is the flash grenade, which actually anyone can go for flash grenades. They're an alpha item, not beta, and they only cost 5. And the description here has since been errated. So I don't know if current versions of the PDF on Drive-Thru have the errata or not, but it's worth noting that now what a flashbang does is it does 8 damage in a medium blast. A good success causes a condition, and an outstanding causes 2 conditions. Condition being stymied or vulnerable. It doesn't do extra damage for having good or outstanding. Before, it was kind of ridiculous. I remember when this PDF first came out and people were just going crazy with flashbang grenades. So, an often slept on one is the psychic reading, which can really give you a good start. It's basically, as Mark has mentioned, and I'm pretty sure I've mentioned in the past with Torghast play and stuff, I've seen a lot of these leader types or people with portent or whatever like to muck around with the drama deck and see what's coming up and move stuff around. That could be very powerful. Let me just double check that. Yeah, it is drama deck. Okay. So they get to the psychic reading, you get to look at it and put it down. And so now you can rearrange the top 5. You know what's coming. So it's pretty much very thematic. Psychic reading helps you. Stim shot, I personally would kind of just make this alpha myself. It's kind of just like a way to get back some shock and requires a first aid test. I think that it probably doesn't need to be beta. But yeah, the one thing that always stuck out that doesn't really belong here is base of operations. It's just so vague about what it actually lets you do. And I would think most of the time a base of operations would either be its own entire like tree of requisitions and things you can do. My group, we played a lot of Conspiracy X back when it first came out, which is like the base building game. So we're all addicted to base building. This doesn't really go far enough, and all it says is it lets you get shock back, which is, you can do that anytime. But otherwise, all of these are pretty good options. And as Lehman mentioned, a lot of people don't even necessarily think about this book a lot of the time. So Airstrike especially is, if you have a good charismatic character, an airstrike can actually do a significant amount of damage at the right time. If you want to go pluck a nightmare tree, just drop a airstrike on it. That can really help.
Yeah, Mark, what of these requisition options either appeal to you or you've seen used quite well?
Flash grenades was abused egregiously originally, and now it's like not so much. I kind of agree with Jay on the reading here. The vehicle customization probably is the least attractive to me, just because you got to have a car to start with, or a vehicle to start with, and then if you're not, you know, I cannot think of the mission that starts with you're in this vehicle. I know a bunch of missions. Well, I guess some of the Living Land ones where you're in a plane, but that eventually that always crashes, because so that's not going to help you. And the ones that go get the vehicle, like what's the Tharkold one about the boat? Are you going to get the steamship that's come back? It's a hard point. Anyway, the psychic reading one I think would be super useful, but its use fades over time, because you've got five of the drama cards, and once you've but that's five, you know what's on those first five cards. You can rearrange them however you want, and you know what you're going to go do as far as the mission's concerned, but you don't know what's coming up, so it's limited, but it's cool. I like it a lot, and it is very thematic. It's very very fitting. The base of operations part, I would say that there's a little bit more to it than Jay let on, because it does say in the text that it's stocked with food, ammunition, and other supplies. You could, a generous GM could read into that there's stuff there that, you know, depending on what your Storm Knights need, maybe it has the stuff you need. If they're in the heat of battle, you got to kind of play with it in what makes sense, because if the mission itself says from scene two to scene three, there isn't time to rest and recover shock, and your Storm Knights want to be able to utilize the base of operations to recover shock, well, do you let them? The overall verisimilitude of the mission from one scene to the next is supposed to be that they don't have time. But now you're going to insert this thing that says that they do. Your mileage may vary there. The one I really like is the fire support team. I have not seen it used. I think that after we do this, it might be, because that's really cool in that everybody gets a follower, and you can do stuff with followers. There are perks that let you do stuff with followers, and it doesn't matter where the follower comes from. So, and there's at least one of them is in this book. But that's really cool, because the person who requests the strike team, everybody gets one soldier that they can direct, and the person who requests it gets the balance thereof. So you might do like a squad of old ords, and off you go. And now you've got, as I stated earlier, the balance of alphas versus betas doesn't matter as much as it does in other games. Having, let's say you've got a table of six Storm Knights, having half a dozen more guns that show up in the battle is also half a dozen more targets that the bad guys have to deal with. And because of the way that Torg Eternity plays, die rolls, the randomness of the game favors the players, and so you can have these ords suddenly have some exploding dice, and now we've got a whole different ball game as they start doing some serious damage to the bad guys. So I kind of like rare stocks as another one that kind of goes along with psychic reading. From a Torganized play standpoint, you really can't get that too much. Because you're tapping all of this stuff that is supposedly held back. I mean, that might get revisited based on the abnormal that hit Sydney, and all of the Eternity shards suddenly going loose, or going missing. But yeah, this is stuff that I think most players stop at the I get two or plus five. And that's as deep as they go into beta requisitions. And this list is almost never even in the conversation.
Yeah, I think this list gets forgotten. And when my players first saw it, they were just like, drooling at the options that they could get. I don't know if they've ever called down the airstrike. I know every act they discuss it, but it does have a 20 difficulty number to roll against, so I think that's what's kind of kept them from getting it. I that the base of operations is kind of strange in the fact that it's like from the Delphi Council, you're requisitioning it, but some places there might not be a Delphi Council place. So as a game master, you might, you know, if you're going in the living land and there's nothing supposedly out there, you could either just say, sorry, there's no base of operations, or in like a Rorsch in the deep jungles, or you could say, okay, let's go for this. You're asking for a base of operation. We as the Delphi Council are gonna gather our intel to try to figure out if there is a safe place, and then at some point bring that into the game a little more organically instead of like you're out in the middle of the desert here. You know, let's just have a base all ready for you. No, they, you know, do some scouting and hey, there's an oasis over here, or you know,
Well,
we
think of it as a safe house or like a living land. We've a newly discovered friendly Adinos tribe that's
there's
opposing
a
the Red
cave
Jaw.
here.
Oh, we found a cave, yeah.
Right, but always it I'm just saying it's not necessarily something that they're always going to have in that region, but
Fair.
bringing it up in the game as a we know this is what you want, we here's a spot to go to, like here's some coordinates, and then that could also solve the problem, Mark, that you were talking about between scenes they want to go to the safe house. Well, okay, the safe house isn't available in this spot, we found it later, or you know, we found it and it's over in this other area. So I'm not saying that don't use the base of operation, I just as game master you might want to tweak it a little bit to fit your game. The blessed ammunition I would definitely allow on like specialized weapons and monster hunter their firearms. Fire support team, when I read this, I was like, man, I'm surprised nobody's done that I've seen, because that is kind of cool. Everybody gets a little Ord character that gets to run around, and as you said, Mark, it presents an extra target. As well as, even when you're facing shock troopers, every once in a while the shock trooper gets lucky and rolls really well. So you know your little group of soldiers might roll really well. The psychic reading, that's something that's interesting, because then as a player who does this, they get the drama deck. They take the first five cards, they rearrange them, but then you have to think, how am I going to rearrange this? Am I going to put all the good stuff at the beginning, but then my first encounter, we might go through everything, and it's usually not the big bad guy or the big end, you know, scene or at the thing. So you're like, maybe I'll put all the bad stuff first so that we can get through it and then get to some good stuff as our pools get better and stuff. So it would give the player some thought on how they're going to stack that deck. But once you get past those first five cards, then your requisition is basically over until you get to a new requisition. Vehicle, that's going to depend. Do we have a Storm Knight who has a vehicle? Do we not have a vehicle? Are we going into a place that you can use vehicles? So that one's going to be a little hit or miss. And I kind of agree with Jay, the stim shot, I don't see why that couldn't be an alpha. It's just a removes or recovers a bonus die of shock and regain consciousness if KO'd, and you have to still make a very easy first aid test to do it. I don't think that that's super powerful. I would probably put that in along with the updated flash grenade as alpha. So the very last thing we have in the beta clearance player's primer is the various divisions. including a little sidebar on Operation Eris. So this stuff should be, since it's in the player's primer, it should be available for your player characters to know, hey, these Operation Eris people are out there. It's a way to remind players, if you know you're playing the heroic Delphi Council Storm Knights, that you don't just always go and kill every opponent. And it also helps with little connection cards and other things that occur that, hey, we're all in jail, but we have a connection here, or this person's Operation Eris, and they're able to slip us a key in our evening meal so that we can get out, you know, and then they can play dumb or whatever. So there's that whole thing. And then it gets into some of the other divisions. The Hero Division is the one that is the reality rated division, and it's mainly what the Storm Knights are. But I will say, and let's have this be a little teaser. The divisions will have more importance as the w starting with the year two. And just being part of Hero Division is not necessarily a mandate. If some of these other divisions appeal to you as a player group, I would say nothing says that you have to be in Hero Division if one of these other type of things, like Homer, they're the ones who spread the story seeds and make areas that have had glory events ready to have Stele removed and to be flipped safely back to Core Earth. That could be something that players would want. There's just certain things that would be cool. Marathon, if you have a bunch of people that like being communications and they, you know, are like the Pony Express in the Wild West type thing of where we need to take these this message to get it to, you know, this other division or cross a large area and get the message safely, if that appeals to your group, that's kind of cool. So what are your thoughts, Jay, on the different divisions?
I really liked this part of the book. It's very handy, actually giving some information on how the Delphi Council works. It's kind of the closest we have to the Delphi Council book. These things got expanded upon as more and more source books came out, but this is still the core telling you what each division is. The shame is I'm not sure how many players have even read this or even know about it, right? It's the kind of thing that GMs will lap up, but players, unless they have a very particular idea, because you're by default in Hero Division, they don't really matter. So I can mention this guy's from Archimedes Division, and he's talking about some reality hypotheses, but the players don't necessarily know much. I have tried to use these divisions as much as possible in my game. I think, and there are some sort of subdivisions and operations detailed in some of the other books, like Operation Roanoke, which I think is technically under Python Division or Cassandra Division. That's the one for Wonders, exploring wonders in the Living Land. So they have joint operations, and what I've liked doing is having the players show up, and instead of the Delphi Council just being, here's your mission, off you go. Have a few NPCs from each division, and they're all going to ask the players to do different things and focus on different parts of the mission. And so they can't really do it all. And so depending on which NPC they like or which one got romanced, they'll that'll affect what they're actually doing. So it's a good way to add a little bit more life to your Delphi Council NPCs as well. Ironically, being in the player book.
Mark, what are your thoughts on the Delphi Council divisions?
They're great flavor for bringing the Delphi Council to life. They make appearances. As Jay said, they got fleshed out in the books, the Mega Adventures. I mean, Operation Soft Cell is all about Eris Division or Operation Eris, and that's really cool because it's ingrained in what's going on, and no spoilers there. It's a lot of fun. It would be cool to get, different mission books on Archimedes missions and Python missions, Spartan missions. I mean, Marathon missions might be a little harder since it says that they typically are work alone, but how does that look? They work alone, and so occasionally you got to go rescue them. So whatever. It's fun. I will tell you that in resurrecting the dispatches for Torganized Play, there's a idea I'm toying with that might make these a little bit more relevant for Torganized Play standpoint. It's kind of a teaser. We'll see how that goes. Beyond that, they're like Jay said, I doubt that the players know a lot about them unless they're GMs as well. Because there's no crunch in the divisions for the players. It's flavor. And unless you use it in your backstory or decide to be from one of them as a Storm Knight when you built your character, it's more of a GM thing.
I'll say I really like Jay, your idea of like after or during the briefing, like they'll have a person from a few divisions come up and hey, while you're on that mission, it would really help,
Yeah.
Cassandra
You don't want to
Division
go
if you do
paranoia
that.
level, but a bit
Right.
lower.
Or, and then the next person's like, oh, Archimedes could really help if you do this. Or, hey, we have, we heard you're going through this area, and on the other side of the, your next station is going to be close to this person we need to get this message to. And then make it so that, no, while the Storm Knights can do anything, they can't do everything. So then they'll have to, as a group or individuals, determine which ones they're going to do and which ones they can't or don't want to do, and then what happiness or disappointment from the other divisions occur as, rewards and or consequences, depending on the Storm Knights' actions, who they've made happy, who they've disappointed, who they have annoyed. And that I think that's a nice way to bring it in, to get the players involved instead of going, hey, here's a bunch of text that I'm going to read for all these divisions so you know what's going on. That's a nice way to introduce it, and then players will remember those personalities. So, having said that, that is the end of the beta clearance players primer. Next time we'll get into the other primer, which is the beta clearance game master primer. But until then, we do encourage you to email us at torgdcd@gmail.com. You can write us, ask us questions, leave comments, etc., and we'll get back to you with answers and comments, etc. But until then, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmiverse. Bye.